Craving the coffee flavor you love, but without the caffeine? Kachava's got you covered with their newest coffee flavor. This all-in-one nutrition shake delivers bold, authentic flavor crafted from premium decaffeinated Brazilian beans. Quality nutrition shouldn't be complicated. Just 2 scoops of Kachava's all-in-one nutrition shake and you've got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. Whether you're craving that coffee taste to kickstart your morning ritual or as a nutrient-packed reward to round out your afternoon, Kachava keeps you fueled and satisfied wherever your day takes you. Plus, it actually tastes delicious. No fillers, no nonsense. Just the good stuff your body craves. And for the times you feel like switching it up, you've got 7 flavors to choose from, all with the highest quality ingredients. Treat yourself to the flavor and nutrition your body craves. Go to kachava.com and use code FITNESS. New customers get 15% off their first order. That's kachava.com, code FITNESS.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Whether you're hunting the back 40 or chasing game deep in the backcountry, the all-new Razor Guide Pack from Outdoor Edge has it all. Coming in at only 12 ounces and in a premium wax canvas roll pack for compact storage and travel, the Razor Guide Pack is 7 blades in total, including a 5-inch replaceable blade folding knife, a 3-inch replaceable blade caping knife, and the flip and zip saw for wood or bone. For more information, visit OutdoorEdge.com.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Welcome to the Limb Hanger Turkey Hunt Podcast, brought to you by Grounded Brand and their new Impact 2.0 turkey vest. Get grounded at groundedbrand.com. The Limb Hanger Turkey Hunt Podcast strives to bring opinions and discussions from all aspects of the turkey hunting community, from legendary turkey hunters who hunted in military fatigues to the modern day hunters embracing technology while maintaining traditions passed along for generations. All are welcome at this roundtable conversation about one of the wariest creatures in North America, the wild turkey. Now stick around. It's going to be a great show.
All right, everybody, welcome to one more edition of Limb Hanger Turkey Hunting Podcast. This may be our last weekly podcast, I guess, until, you know, before we dive off into this long 9-month off season that us turkey hunters have every year. We kind of wanted to finish up things this year with a turkey hunting state of the union of sorts, in that we wanted to get the perspective of a traveling turkey hunter that has been dang near everywhere almost every year, and get some feedback from him, what he's seeing across the landscape as a whole, or maybe even a regional perspective, bird populations, what these changing regulations that we're seeing all over the country now, how that's affecting a traveling turkey hunter. And good, bad, ugly, trends that he's seen this year in years past, and maybe what he's seeing kind of reading the tea leaves going into the future for the next handful of years. And we wanted to get the perspective of a traveling turkey hunter, like I said, who has seen every corner of the country, and who better than Mr. Dave Owens. So, Dave, it is smack in the middle of June right now. It is a tough time to be a turkey hunter. How you holding up?
Oh, man, we're doing what we can. You know what I mean? You can relate. I think everybody here can probably relate to what it's like. That first or second full week of not getting up every day, you're still waking up, seeing sunlight come through the blinds and panicking, you know, jumping up thinking you've overslept. It is what it is. You know, we just got to take it in stride.
It's I can see on video right now, and I can tell the bags under your eyes are not as large as they were a couple of weeks ago when we were seeing y'all on Instagram there. You got a little bit more color in your face. You're looking a little bit healthier. So do you kind of bounce back pretty quick after season, or as far as, you know, physically? Because I know, you know, you spend more days in the woods than anybody that we know of, and it has to physically take a toll on you. So do you kind of bounce back, you know, eating halfway decent food, you know, when you get back home, 3 meals a day kind of thing? Do you get in better shape after season?
Yeah, most definitely. Just coming off the road and not eating just trash, which is what happens on the road, you know. All the fast food and stuff that you ingest on the road, I'm glad to get away from that. Get home to some of Courtney's cooking is always welcome that, because yeah, like I said, man, you just get tired of peanut butter sandwiches and McDonald's, and you know, folks like me that spend so much time in the McDonald's or places like that with Wi-Fi so that we can work. I've had about my last Big Mac for the year, I think. So,
and you become a connoisseur of roller food at the gas station and truck stop.
Listen,
I do that because I'm on the road a lot for work, so I could probably do a good power ranking of truck stop food.
Yeah. It's never a bad option though to choose gas station pizza. Listen, I have been to a lot of different gas stations, and very rarely do you find one that just doesn't taste good. For me, like Dave, you're talking about being happy that you don't have to eat that food anymore. There's part of my soul that is lost whenever I'm not eating gas station pizza all the time.
Can't go wrong with a hunk of pizza or a hunk of Hunt Brothers pizza, I think is what is a popular one around some of the southern eateries.
Casey's pizza, it's tough to beat Casey's if you're in the Midwest.
Casey's, yeah, it's hard to beat Casey's, and those are some of the diamonds in the rough. You'll find some of these convenience stores that have a lot of the delis and the home cooking back in the back, you know what I mean? And those are you kind of remember those. You drop pins there too. So,
yeah, man, absolutely, dude. Like Joey said, like it's hard when you're coming off of just going so much, like just nonstop. I want to know, like, do you keep count of how many days you actually spend in the woods? And if you do, what is that number like? As far as like 100 days. 200 days, like how many, obviously it wouldn't be 200 days, but
as far as spring specifically, and this is, you know, mornings with either a gun in my hand or a camera in my hand, it's usually around 90 or 93 days is what it has been over the last couple springs. This spring, I don't think I don't think this spring was an exception. I think if I sat down and counted it up, it would be about the same, because we started really early. We ended a little bit sooner because typically last year, I think I went to the 6th, and typically it's around the 5th through the 7th or so when Michigan or Maine will expire. And this year we were in Maine and we finished on the 2nd. So there was a handful of days there. And then there was I think there was 2 days during the spring. Just caught myself in a position where it was bad weather outside and I didn't have a tag and couldn't find nobody or something like that. But frankly, from when we kicked it off, February 26th, I think it was the youth season in South Florida this year. From that date, you know, you get to hunt a couple days there. Then you got about 5 days to scout, and the big boys get to swing the bat. And then it's, you know, it's a roller coaster from there till June. So, very fortunate to be able to see that many sunrises. And yeah, it's exhausting. There's bag under the eyes, but it's like you're a machine when it gets. You get about what is it? I think it says after 2 weeks things become a habit. So it doesn't take long for you to get into the rhythm, and it's just a. It's a welcomed exhaustion because I'd do it again tomorrow. If I could start over and tomorrow was, you know, March 3rd, I'd be signing up, no doubt, wishing my life away, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That kind of takes us right into one of the things I wanted to discuss with you as far as changing regulations and season dates, between, you know, Florida opener and, you know, you guys spend a handful of days or several days out there, you, Chubbs, and Squirrel, seems like every year now. It's almost become a tradition now for you guys. Mm-hmm. Is there a gap in between Florida and Mississippi now that Mississippi is kind of changing things around for non-residents, or are you still able to pick up in Florida and go right into Mississippi?
Yeah, you can pick up in Florida and go straight into Mississippi typically. Or you can move on up to Central Florida, because, you know, their season usually comes in about that same time. It's all dependent, obviously, on tag availability, whether you still have tags in your pocket or not, or whether you can find somebody with a valid tag to follow. That's one of the things that I think I know everybody was kind of up in arms about the situation with Mississippi. And one of the things that I do take kind of offense to when it comes to Mississippi is they have like this little asterisk to where you can't, you know, if you draw one of their public land permits or tags or vouchers, I can't remember what term they use, but you can't have someone to, you know, come with you. So if you draw a WMA permit in Mississippi, you can't have a buddy come with you to call or, you know, just enjoy the hunt. Wow. Which I find is a directly conflict, you know, because it reduces opportunity for folks. It gives, you know, you look in the National Forest booklet and it's like, you know, if you go hiking in the National Forest, always go with a friend, you know, don't ever go alone. But if you go hunting on the National Forest, you're supposed to go by yourself. So it's kind of a conflict there that I think needs to be addressed. Not sure even why that's in place, but, you know, other than that little, rule or regulation, you know, even if you don't have a tag, you can assist somebody, you can go with somebody, you can enjoy the hunt. And if you're a true turkey hunter, you know, I understand you've got to spend a certain amount of time behind the gun itself. I won't pretend like you don't, but you're there for the game, you're there for the process. I don't have to be responsible for, you know, the final step of that process. I mean, if I could just be there for the rest of it, then I'm happy. So you can usually find somewhere. Yeah, has it become more challenging? Yes, the Mississippi situation and the non-resident voucher that you have to get, which I do feel like is unfortunate. I understand the reasoning, but I do feel like it's unfortunate, and I'm afraid that it's going to be kind of a knee-jerk reaction for other states. I do, you know, I applaud Mississippi for looking for another avenue about, you know, still allowing a turkey season to open on March 15th rather than doing what some of the surrounding states have done in delaying their seasons. You know, they got creative, and I do, you know, applaud them for that. But I'm just afraid that, you know, stuff like that's going to send an attack on non-residents, and I don't think that's the answer. A lot of people may, but I'm just not one of those people.
Based on your personal perspective and experiences in Mississippi, did the quality of the hunt go up any this year as far as pressure, things like that, since they introduced the tag system or the quota tag?
Yeah, I mean, it's been tit for tat, man. I mean, from the years, and I won't pretend like I've got this exhaustive like Mississippi experience, because I don't, because I didn't start visiting Mississippi regularly until Alabama started delaying their season, because I was always coming home to hunt, you know, and Alabama opened right there with Mississippi. So I was always coming to Alabama to hunt, and they delayed their season. And then that was about the time that I started getting the flexibility that I now have. So, you know, I had a couple different components there that caused me to be a Mississippi regular at the beginning of their season. But as far as what I've seen from the years that I've been there consecutively now, which I think is 2020, 21, 22, 23. So 4 years in a row. I mean, the hunting's been, you know, it's been comparable every year. I mean, yeah, there's some good years that are better, but that's, you know, that doesn't have anything to do with pressure. As far as pressure specifically, I mean, I would say there's less pressure now than there was. I mean, I have heard some people say that, and then I've heard some people say the opposite because they think the public land voucher stuff adds a little bit of urgency so that, like, when somebody gets chosen, they have to go now, to where once upon a time they didn't have that urgency and people didn't come. So, frankly, I just think it's been a little bit of an inconvenience. I don't think it's affected the – you know, affected the hunt pressure at all, from what I see.
For those of us, you know, that live in the Southeast and that hunt primarily in the Southeast, I think the regulation changes for a handful of states are a little bit easier to juggle and navigate than somebody like you that, you know, you just said you spend 90 to 93 days, you know, turkey hunting in a season across, you know, X amount of states, which I would assume is probably in the double digits. By the time it's all said and done. So how do you navigate changing seasons, bag limits, any one change in a regulation in one state? I mean, it's almost easily overlooked if you're not doing your homework and you're not paying attention. How do you kind of navigate that? Do you either have a spreadsheet or is there anything that you have organized to keep up and like, hey, I need to make sure I can go, you know, to this area on this date. I can access whatever area. Like, how do you sort all that out when you travel all these places?
No, I don't do nearly as much of the planning and the strategic planning like I used to. Back in the U.S. Slam days, everything was based on where I hadn't been yet and doing the exhaustive amount of research to make sure that I could do it efficiently. And I looked at that. Now, obviously, visiting these states with the rule changes and I've gotten in trouble with that before, like not paying attention to new stuff. So it's, you know, always at the top of the list now. Luckily, I have, you know, friends that kind of help me stay on top of that. Like, hey, did you see the new rule change here? Or, you know, oh, I heard that so-and-so is going to do this, better look into it, that kind of stuff. So I'm pretty well aware. And I kind of get as the season approaches, I get kind of an update on what states have done made new changes. But that is one of the advantages, really. It's just not really a hindrance. It's an advantage to having the flexibility I have. It's just to, if somebody makes a change that doesn't work into my schedule, I usually have the ability to flip and flop around to find somewhere else to go and do. It doesn't really take any, you know, more just paying attention, I guess you could say.
We're always quick, and a lot of people on social media are always quick to jump on the negative side of these regulation changes all across everywhere. You don't have to name a particular state that has made a certain change, but are there any changes that have really benefited you as a traveling turkey hunter?
Benefited me, man. I don't think so. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. Nothing that's really, I can say for sure, if I was a southern turkey hunter, a southeastern turkey hunter, the change that Tennessee made in allowing the season to go all the way to the end of May. I mean, I know some people is going to cry and whine about having to hunt summer turkeys, but let me tell you something. If I was still stuck at a 9-to-5 and I was somewhere in the Southeast, buddy, I'd be jumping for joy that somebody was going to let me legally turkey hunt to the end of May. I understand it's going to be hot, but you know what? That could be in Maine as well at the end of May. It's just all, you know, what we were kind of given at that time of frame, you know, at that time frame. So, as far as anything that was beneficial, I'll just be honest and say that I'm the luckiest man alive because I get to just go. I mean, it's so nothing I can think of off the top of my head has been a change that has been beneficial. No, I mean, it's just, you know, it is what it is when you have that kind of flexibility. Just trying to think of from a local perspective, I could definitely see where the negativity is there when some folks can't hunt like they used to hunt. I mean, I heard that as loud in Alabama as anywhere. You know, we've had a reduced limit, and we've had the season pushed back and things of that nature. And then a lot of folks were, you know, up in arms. And I it's kind of hard to understand, like, the explanations for the public land delay when the private land's not. That explanation to me doesn't ring quite as clearly as just an overall delay in the season. I can kind of understand it. I don't like it, but, you know, I can understand it. But still, it doesn't ring as legitimate as just an overall delayed season. It seems like, you know, but other than, you know, it's just, I guess I just have the normal gripes as the next guy.
Yeah, and it's so hard, Dave. And so I know that you, as a person who has a platform, you have to be real careful about how you navigate those waters, too. Because you have a lot of people mm-hmm. listening, you have a lot of people hearing what you have to say and holding you to what you say on a podcast when, you know, in 2 years, information might be different. And so people need to understand that part about what we talk about in these type of podcasts. You're just a guy who has got a large data sheet for turkey hunting, right? Like that's who we're talking to right here. A guy who has been to a whole lot of different states, as Joey said earlier. But that being said, I hope I don't set you up for potential persecution. Are there any things that you have seen with all these regulation changes that you feel like is absolutely been beneficial? Maybe not for you, but for the turkeys.
Yeah, I mean, just kind of getting to the first part of your comment there, where you started was, yeah, I mean, we can all change our minds, right? I mean, I can understand, you know, we learn new things, and in the turkey world right now, there's more data and research and statistics coming out that we get to digest and kind of formulate our own opinions. And that's one of the things that I really like with this day and age, that everybody's kind of processing and digesting this information, and they're coming up with their own, you know, issues or their own solutions. And I think the melting pot analogy is really good, to where if everybody just kind of throws their ideas into one pot, we're sure to have the answer in there somewhere. As far as the regulations, kind of going to the second part of your question there, comment, the regulations that have been beneficial for the turkey. I'll be honest, man, I'm one of those people that I think the turkey, the resiliency of the turkey itself is going to win. As long as we keep, legal measures in check and man, where I know what hole we're diving down into right here. Because what's legal and what's ethical is two completely different things. And I don't want to dive down that rabbit hole, so to speak, because in my opinion, as turkey hunters, we need to keep our focus on making more turkeys. I think, sure, the taking from the population, the killing of the turkeys, as long as we're focusing on male turkeys, do we need to keep an eye on it? Do we need to, like, you know, keep it under, you know, a microscope? Sure. You know, let's pay attention to it. Let's just don't ignore it. But I think the bulk of our effort and our focus needs to remain on the production part of the turkey world. I mean, we need to focus on making more turkeys and why we aren't making as many as we used to. Is dirty and is involved in that conversation about the techniques and the strategies and that kind of stuff that gets you down that rabbit hole and gets you shunned by a lot of people. As many times as I've been involved in that discussion, that conversation, I don't mind that discussion, because I have my beliefs as everybody else does. I just don't think that is the answer to our quote unquote turkey issue that people are so vocal about nowadays.
Yeah. And I preface that the second question with the first, because I kind of expected you to have a similar answer to what you did. And, you know, what I was hoping to hear was steps in a direction are a step in the right direction, right? Like, we're going to figure out the solution as we do these things. And so I appreciate your answer. And like always, Dave Owens never leaves us wanting more. or needing to hear more.
Well,
about
I mean,
that.
It's just, you know, I mean, it's like a, it's a restrictive thing. If you start reducing opportunity, which is a slippery slope, I'm not one to say that it's not. I don't like reduced opportunity. Way in the beginning of these whole turkey decline discussions, and the first thing they started wanting to do is axe the beginning of the season and take away opportunity. I don't like it. I will be the first one to tell you, like, that is what I feel like should be the last resort.
Yeah.
I feel like we should kind of cut the corners of the pie before we should take a slice right out of the center. And I feel like cutting away season length and cutting out the beginning of the season is cutting right out of the center. Is if it's necessary, I am all on board with. I just felt like we hadn't cut enough of those corners yet and hadn't done enough looking. Now, I'd also understand something's better than nothing. So I'm glad that we have agencies that are listening to us now, because I think for a decade we had researchers and scientists and people that were kind of screaming into a hollow bucket that nobody was listening. You know, I mean, once this stuff began getting some momentum, some of these researchers were like, look at this paper, look at this, you know, this discussion that I had 8 years ago. I couldn't get anybody to listen to. So I'm glad we have at least people listening. And like you said, a step in any direction could potentially be a step in the right direction. At least somebody's listening. But yeah, I'm glad that we have a lot of research kind of hitting the ground and have some people with some bright minds trying to figure out how we could find a solution to this thing with hopefully minimal impacts to us as hunters, our opportunities and stuff. So.
Yeah, this isn't much of a question, more of a comment. You know, Dave, you and I talked earlier in the year. I had some TWRA had some stakeholder meetings as far as what then they wanted feedback on maybe how to best to approach turkey management going forward. And, you know, you and I had a discussion, and I think, you know, the topic was brought up in our discussion of how cyclical turkeys are. You know, a really good hatch in a certain part of the country can probably raise the population of that local population almost 25%, maybe even 30%, or even higher, you know, or more, depending on, you know, what the turkey population is down there. And it got me to thinking, and it really opened my eyes as, you know, how I've kind of paid attention to hatches in the past, maybe the past decade or so, especially around Tennessee. And I've said it before, and I'll harp on it until I'm proven otherwise, is that significant weather, I think, has had the biggest effect on turkey hatches, at least in Tennessee, maybe even the Southeast, than I think anything else.
No doubt.
And I think the hatch in 2021, the hatches from last year in 2022, and we haven't really had that bad of weather up until now in spring. So I anticipate, and I'm starting to see reports and sightings of multiple couple week old poults, you know, per hen. So I think we're probably going to have a pretty good hatch this year. And I think once we have a few of these good hatches in a row and we see this kind of uptick in populations, at least here in the Southeast, you know, if my theory, or if that theory is true, that weather is so significant on hatch success and poult success, I'm anxious to see what comes out of these next few years, you know, with harvest data, you know, hunter participation, all the other studies that, you know, TFT's got going on, NWTF's going on, and now we got the low country game bird, I forget the exact name, but that's three big players doing turkey research now. And you've said it before, the best thing to come out of all this is that more people are talking about turkeys than there ever has been. And there's more research going on than there ever has been. And I really hope that these state commissioners take this data and take these hunter observations. Like, this is why the poult surveys are so important on, you know, during that summertime. And there's so many states that have them now, there's no excuse. And I've got to where, I don't know if Alabama has one, but I'm down in Alabama for work this week. If Alabama has a poult survey, I'm going to look it up and I'm going to fire that thing up. And while I'm riding around down here for work, if I see turkeys, I'll log it, you know, for the state's sake. So, but yeah, long story short, with all this stuff, all this information that we have access to now and all the research that's going on, I really hope in the next few years, we really see science-based hunting regulations, aside from maybe outcry from social media, maybe ill-informed opinions just coming from hunters in general.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I just watched, I used to, or my dad used to be a really big rabbit hunter. He used to be a small game hunter from back in the day. And I watched a lot of these public meetings that I went to. And that was the example that I was given was, look what's happened to the small game hunter, because our, you know, deer ruled everything. And no matter where you're at, and you know, when we go to these public meetings and they get the comments and the deer hunters, whatever they want kind of is what goes. Cause that's, I guess, what, you know, butters the bread, so to speak. So I watched the rabbit hunters go to, I never went to a public input meeting where there wasn't a group of rabbit hunters there just begging for their season, just begging for their small game season. But every flipping year they got ignored. The deer season got longer. Every year they would extend the deer season. And these rabbit hunters were just like, look, y'all are just eating away at my small game season because 99% of the ground is leased up by deer hunting clubs and they won't allow us to rabbit hunt until the deer season is over. So, you know, we can't run our dogs. We can't, you know, and except for a couple of beagle clubs, they just flat out couldn't hunt. And I got to thinking, I was like, man, deer hunting is continuing to grow and continuing to grow, and hunting in general, that's good. You know, I would never, you know, shun anyone for becoming a deer hunter. But that being said, I wanted to make sure that what I was passionate about, being turkey hunting, never was ignored. You know, it was a lot. It would, honestly, you know, we can all say that that would be a long way from being ignored in the Southeast. But, you know, I do travel and I see parts of the country to where turkeys are ignored and they are almost disliked. You know, I've told the story once and they're, you know, if I've told it once, I've told it 100 times, but the story in Maine where I asked permission to hunt on this big dairy farm and saw a couple turkeys on it, knocked on the, caught the guy out there on his tractor, stopped and talked to him. He says, no, it's just, you know, it's just, you know, for the farm, we don't allow anybody to hunt it. You can't complain with, you know, you can't be mad at them. This is their property. They're, you know, this is their prerogative to do what they wish. So I just, you know, making small talk, like, you know, you see any turkeys in the area? Oh, yeah, we have hundreds of turkeys. He said, as a matter of fact, when they come in the fall, we shoot them by the hundreds off our silage stacks because they get in our silage stacks and scratch it out and bust open the twine and they get scattered everywhere. So we shoot them. We just drive up to them when it's the snowpack, you know, they can't go anywhere else. We just shoot them by the hundreds off our silage stacks. And I mean, that just turned my stomach to the point. I mean, I physically almost got sick and I'm like, but you won't allow somebody to go out here right now and legally hunt to kill a couple of them. You know what I mean? Nope. It's our, you know, it's what we do for the farm. And I was like, man, if somebody was shooting hundreds of turkeys in Georgia or Alabama or Mississippi, there would be an outcry. He would be crucified. You know what I mean? So I'm just glad that we in the Southeast don't have that kind of issue. But can you imagine if turkey hunting, like the opportunity was suppressed to the point to where people didn't care about turkeys anymore and that kind of thing was allowed to happen? Like I said, we're a long way from that in the Southeast because we have died in the wool turkey hunters. But it's just, you can drive, you know, a handful of hours up the road and see it. And that just scared the crap out of me. So opportunity is kind of a big thing for me. I like the opportunity. And just continuing on the opportunity discussion, you know, people want to compare. I know when all of the opportunity was starting to kind of, some of the opportunity was starting to shrink and they were making some of these changes, you heard an outcry of people like, well, yeah, you know, we need to reduce the opportunity because I used to be able to go out here and hear 10 turkeys or 12 turkeys. And now I do good to go out there and hear 3 or 4 turkeys. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, the next thing out of their mouth is, you know, when I went to Illinois or when I went to Iowa, you know, you can go up there and still hear 15 or 20 turkeys in the morning and they only have a 1-week season. And I'm like, look, If you want that experience, if you want the hearing 15 or 20 turkeys in a morning experience, go get you an Iowa tag, get you a Missouri tag, like go for that experience. I'm one that had rather have to hunt him for 5 days and just be able to hunt him. You know, I'd rather have the opportunity. I'd rather it be more difficult. I'd rather have to put more effort into it to actually kill a turkey, but have the opportunity to do so rather than being able to go out there and hear 15 and kill one in a day or two. So it's like a different, it's a different desire for folks. You know, the people in Alabama don't need to expect, in my opinion, the people in Alabama, if they're going to hunt National Forest public ground, shouldn't expect to hear 20 turkeys in the morning. That's an Iowa experience. Like, but the guys in Iowa only have 7 days to hunt, because if they get chosen for their tag, they get period B or period C or whatever it is, they get 7 days to go have fun. To where in Alabama, you know, I can wake up for 4 to 5 days in a row and go have fun, you know. So that's kind of one of those things that was overlooked during that discussion that I was trying to get people to realize. Like, there's, it's a completely different desire. You just got to want to go. That was probably down to some rabbit hole that we didn't intend to go down, but.
We talk, you talk about rabbit, you talk about rabbit hunters. So it was all related.
No, oh, there we go.
that's what it was. No, you're talking pretty strong about opportunity there. You get to see what the opportunity is like across the country. And right, it's no secret since COVID, there's been at least a perceived uptick in hunting pressure. I will say for me personally, there's only been one place that I've been to that I felt like it was an unreasonable amount of hunting pressure. Only one place. Everything else seemed like it was going to be pretty... It was huntable, you know. Haven't seen just crazy amounts of pressure. But again, you have been to a lot of the country in the last 3 months. Have you seen a lot of that quote unquote COVID pressure start dying down, or do you feel like it's still continuing to climb up?
The pressure that I see now may have just a fraction to do with COVID. And I will say that only because I think COVID taught a lot of people their value, taught a lot of people they couldn't get fired. You know, they were too valuable to be fired. And I don't think they ever realized that before. So the whole working remotely kind of changed the whole scene of being employed, being able to, you know, work from a laptop or whatever. So I think that changed the whole world. And that obviously added to people having some more flexibility during the spring to do what they love. And I would not, people can get mad if they want to, but I think that was a good thing. I think it was good for people to pursue their passions. I mean, I'm the luckiest man in the world because I did just that. I mean, I walked right to the edge of the cliff and jumped. I was like, it's going to be this or nothing. So, you won't hear me complain about pressure because I've went from one corner of this country to the other, and I just haven't seen it, with the exception of the 2020 spring, to where there was a couple places where I did see enough pressure for me to go, man, this could be an issue for the turkeys. No other place in the country have I seen. Has there been more people than there was 10 years ago? Yeah, there's been more people than there was 10 years ago. I haven't had one issue finding turkeys and having turkeys to myself. Has there been isolated spots, like you said? Has there been isolated areas that I went to and had some people due to one reason or another? Who knows why the reason was, but has there been a couple more trucks on said specific road? Yeah, there's been those type of situations, but guess what? Two roads over, I had it to myself. So I think a lot of that has to do with effort, and a lot of that has to do with the popular excuse. You know what I mean? You know, it's just a popular excuse right now, and I'm sure somebody would be ready to throw stones at me for that and blame me for the pressure or whatever. That's fine. Because if it was so bad, why are, you know, these people able to go, including myself, go from one area of the country to the next and have success year in and year out? It's just flat out not that bad. It's the popular excuse right now.
I kind of want to start gearing towards bird populations and different areas of the country. And like I said, we can break this up in, you know, regions like Southeast, Northeast, Northwest, Southwest. or Midwest or whatever, and we'll try to stay away from specific states so we don't get called out for hot spotting states, except for Kentucky. We all know how good Kentucky turkey hunting is. But yeah, we can, as far as, you know, like I was saying before, you know, with the good hatches that we've had the last couple of years, at least here in the Southeast, I can tell you from the spots that I went to this year, there were just more turkeys almost everywhere I went. More turkeys, more goblin birds in general. Are you seeing that? Well, I guess we can start here in the Southeast, whatever you want to deem the Southeast. Did you see more turkeys in the Southeast maybe this year than you have previous years? Or did you not see as many? Or what's your feedback on that?
I'm just a lucky guy, I guess, because I haven't had issues finding turkeys or hearing turkeys anywhere I've gone at any point, frankly. I mean, like I said, the 2020 season, maybe the pressure had them subdued a little bit in certain areas. But other than that, the turkey population, I'm a bad guy to ask, because I don't stay in one place more than a couple of days. I do believe there's probably isolated pockets where turkeys are not doing as well as they once were. Like I said, when we started this discussion, I will always be one to err on the side of, hey, let's talk about turkeys. Hey, yeah, there's something wrong, because I don't want y'all to ignore them. You know, I want them to stay at the top of the discussion. I want them to be an issue that we all have to address. So I will never say, oh, turkeys are doing great, we can just ignore them now. Because I think that was what happened, you know, for the last decade or maybe even two. You know, I think, you know, we got them to a point. And when I say we, the agencies, organizations like NWTF and these people that put turkeys where they are now, all of these state agencies, I think we got them. It was like, man, we got them and they're good. I don't want that to happen again. So I'll never be the guy that's like, oh, man, there ain't no turkey issues. Y'all need to quit looking at them. Just let us go like we were. But if it was just like, if Dave Owens had to say, is there less turkeys now than there was 5 years ago? I couldn't tell you that there is, because I've never had an issue finding them. Or, you know, there's some people that I really trust out there that are talking about the issues around, say, their specific area. And I trust them. Like, I don't doubt them. If they are saying that there's an issue in their area, then there's obviously an issue in their area. But as far as what I've seen traveling from one corner to the next, no, I haven't seen anything that I would say is a quote unquote turkey decline.
Yeah. With that kind of feedback, we may just, you know, kind of skip over the regional population discussion because it's so isolated, just like you said. Go ahead, Parker.
Are you about to skip past that? Because I have another question that has to do with that kind of.
Well, go right ahead.
Okay, because I don't want us to get past this, because, and I know we're doing, it's more informative, right? From your perspective type things, but you did mention some pretty tactical things in there. At least we could go down that rabbit trail. We don't have to go all the way, but I do want to mention something you talked about, effort. Kind of people, like, it's the popular excuse, right, to say that there is something, in fact, wrong. And man, I just to back that up, we talk to a lot of people, right, through podcasting, through network stuff, whatever. We talk to a lot of different people. This year I've had people tell me it was the worst season ever. There's no turkeys. They're gone forever. They're extinct. And I've had other people tell me, my goodness, we got more turkeys than we know what to do with no rhyme or reason really as to why there's more turkeys here than there are over there or whatever. But one thing we do talk about it a lot, especially when we talk about going to other states, is having the flexibility to kind of move around and get, you know, if you're hunting one national forest over here, you may get there very well and find out that it, for whatever reason, there's not a lot of turkeys, or you're struggling to find them, but then go into another area and you may find, you know, a pocket. Do you find that to be more or less the truth, like what could potentially separate good pockets versus bad or empty pockets, could be as simple as moving 20 miles north, south, east, or west. Is that kind of what you, when you say you don't have trouble finding turkeys, is it because that's what you're constantly doing, is moving that quickly if you're not finding them?
Yeah, and just being adaptive. I mean, I think anybody that wants to be successful as a turkey hunter has got to be able to look at what they can use to their advantage, whether that be, you know, wide open areas and using glassing and whatnot to find turkeys quickly, whether it be, finding the area of the state that's going to hold more consistent turkey populations, or the area of the state where the weather's going to be better while they're there. You know, I've put a whole plan on its head before because I looked and this side of the state was going to be getting high winds. This side of the state wasn't. Like when I'm going to a place where I'm hunting with my ears, that is the most important thing for me, because if you go to a place where you're going to have to rely on your ears, deep timber, you know, wooded ridges or whatnot, and if you go there and show up and there's a 15 to 25 mile an hour wind for 3 days, that's really going to impede you finding turkeys. So yeah, I think when I say I don't have problems finding turkeys, a whole lot of that has got to do with experience as a turkey hunter, because I take those type of things into consideration where somebody less experienced may not. It's not to say that I'm any shape, form, or fashion better than anybody else. It's just that, you know, when you do something and you get it wrong, you tend to remember that pretty well. So those meetings, when you come back without a turkey or without hearing a turkey or seeing a turkey or finding sign, you quickly figure out how not to do that again. So, but just turkey numbers in general, when I'm cruising across, I mean, I'm talking to biologists and I mean, frankly, the amount of biologists that I've talked to, there's only a couple regions in the country where I've talked to them where they say, you know, turkeys aren't doing so well here. Turkeys are on the downward. You know, I may talk to somebody that says, you know, they're not as quite as many as there was a few years ago, but there's still plenty of turkeys. And like, I don't see that as a turkey population decline in the sense that it needs some type of, we don't need to do anything. That's just turkey populations doing what turkey populations do. And like Joe was just mentioning, like we've seen crazy good hatches, in my opinion. I've going from one side of the country to the other, the amount of jakes, and this is all the way from 2020. Like I've started seeing jakes in 2020, 2021, 22. Like these hatches that we've had have been phenomenal, in my opinion. Most, I'm sure there's some areas, Arkansas, Louisiana, I think, had some bad hatches with the floods they had with the river there over those years. But for the most part, the majority of the country saw some good, good weather. And I think Joey hit the nail on the head when he said Mother Nature decides how good your hatch is going to be. We can assist, but our assists are so minute they can almost be overlooked. Because if Mother Nature don't want there to be a good hatch, then you might as well put your hands in your pockets, because no matter how much work you do, it's not going to matter. But yeah, like as far as finding turkeys, getting back to that original question, I think it has to do with twofold. I think the turkey populations across the country are doing pretty flipping well. I think a lot of the noise you're hearing is just like we said, you know, it's social media is a couple clicks away from being able to express your opinion. And when you get mad, everybody writes more when they're mad, you know. Mm-hmm. They don't write more when they're just having a normal old day. And that combined with having the experience to be able to put yourself in the right place, keep your feet moving, you know. Oh, I walked into 4 goblin turkeys today. Well, it was day 3, you know. You don't ever talk about the first 2 days where you didn't walk into 4 turkeys. So it's kind of maybe a little bit amplified considering social media, and you share the good days.
That's right. And you know, just to further that point, one common factor that I see in people who have similar answers to yourself with this, like, you know, I'm not seeing like a crazy decline. It's not like they're not there or about to go extinct. People like yourself, they always have the willingness to move, right? The willingness to go find, because things like weather do have such a big impact. As we just talked about, you could have had a great hatch 20 miles north of where you're at, but you would never know. And I find that to be one of the biggest hurdles that other hunters have to learn to hop over at some point, right? Like, they cannot get past, but what if I'm staying here? What if I'm sleeping in this location? I can't just move. Well, yeah, you have to, right? Like, most of the people who are talking about what you're talking about, what we're talking about here, have learned that. It's just, you've got to be willing to do that and find where those pockets are. Because when you can find, when you do that, when you finally figure that out, I mean, there's so much freedom in that. Joey, we can talk about it even in Montana. Like, while we were there, having that willingness to maybe go 20 miles south, or, and not just depending on, maybe previous intel or a bird, the bird that we saw on private land or whatever, like just having the willingness to go and do that. And then before every single turkey, Dave and Adam, you guys can probably both relate to this. The 10 minutes leading up to, like, leading up to your next turkey kill, it feels like you might never kill another one, right? You know what I'm talking about? Like,
absolutely.
Like,
yeah. You know, remember how to do this?
Yeah. Have I ever done this before? Well, I just did it. Even if you just killed one the day before that, you know, you're just like, it's hard to, but when you, once you do, once you make it happen, you kill this turkey, whatever, you look back at those things, and it almost always for me seems like a common denominator thing that I did in every single one of these hunts was I did something a little bit different. I maybe moved to a different place or whatever. And so, yeah, I don't have a follow-up question necessarily, but more than anything, just to, you know, I believe 100% what you're saying is true. I think if people will learn this one small little detail of how you hunt, especially when you're traveling to hunt, man, it can make you believe that there's not, in fact, an issue with the turkey population.
And doing what I do, and I hear it all the time, trust me, is yeah, watching my, you know, watching the Penhody Project, it's not like I'm faking anything. I'm not making any of this stuff up, but the interactions that I get to have, those experiences that I get to have so frequently, may be somewhat of an embellished reality. And I try to tell people that, like, not what I'm doing is fake. It's just that what you have to consider is this. I'm a guy who's put myself in a position to where I get to go where the turkeys are gobbling the best. I get to go where the weather is the best. I get to be there when the turkeys are in the perfect stage of breeding. Like, that's the flexibility that I've created. And so, yeah, sure, it seems like I'm always in gobbling turkeys and I'm always around gobbling turkeys, but it's like those couple good days of spring. Like, if you hunt Alabama all spring and there may be seven or eight of them where the turkeys are just, you can't do anything wrong. My philosophy is being in each state on those 7 or 8 days. So, like, I'm not faking anything, but at the same time, like, my reality is chasing those 7 or 8 of the best days across the country. So when somebody's like, oh man, he kills so-and-so turkeys a day, or he kills one a day. No, he don't kill one a day. He sure don't. But
whatever, Dave, success, you do.
You know, it's like, you know, if the turkeys, if I hear rumor, like, I have a buddy's like, hey man, switch just flipped in Tennessee, or switch just flipped in Kentucky, or switch just flipped in Missouri. Guess what? Dave's in his truck within, you know, hopefully within a day, he's there to enjoy that switch flip, you know? That's the reality that kind of goes a little bit unnoticed, because it just seems like a guy that's going in the woods wherever he just happens to be. And it's just not, I'm not there by chance, you know, I'm there for a reason.
Well, you got to think too, the amount of days that you just are able to spend in the woods, period. Like, even if you just had a 10% success rate, I mean, you'd kill 9 turkeys, you know, all mm-hmm. season, which is more than 95% of the turkey hunters out there, probably. But the fact that you get to spend, you know, so many days out in the woods, I'm not trying to discredit you or anything, but we've, Park and I have talked about it before. You know, if you just spend days in the woods, I mean, you're going to find success eventually. And if you get to a spot, you don't know nothing else to do. You know how to at least walk, and you can find turkeys if you walk enough. So I think this, you know, this, the amount of opportunity that you provide yourself as an individual, you know, be it Dave or Parker or Adam or any of us, you know, the more days you spend in the woods, you know, the better odds you're going to have.
Time is that ingredient.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. I kind of wanted to go back. We kind of hinted on social media a little bit, and how much that we see on social media nowadays. I know you don't have your nose in your phone, you know, all spring, you know, you're turkey hunting, but I do know that you probably keep a finger on the pulse of what's kind of going on overall. Is there anything you kind of noticed this past spring, either a good trend that you saw or maybe something that you hope to never, ever see again as far as social media goes?
Man, just kind of the same old song and dance, you know, nothing overly, that was more this year than last. Just, and it's mostly coming from just a handful of individuals. You know, we just have to understand that there's a certain sector of quote unquote us, or people who dress up in camouflage, at least, that are doing things for the controversy. That has become so apparent, and we still continue to give these people our attention. If we could somehow muster up the ability to ignore that certain sector of people who is obviously doing things that just kind of knee jerk, just because any impression is an impression for them. They just need the numbers. If we could somehow figure out as a hunting community, just ignore those people, it'd be great. Granted, you can't let those people go unregulated, because I think that is the good that social media provides, to where, you know, I get the comment, you know, probably more than most, about how, you know, social media is killing hunting, social media is ruining the sport of hunting, social media is ruining our wildlife populations. And I'm the first one to tell you, if I could flip a switch and end the whole thing, I'd probably be the first one to flip it. And they're like, oh, that don't make sense. You submit to social media so much, you do the videos, you do the Instagram, you do the Facebook, you know, you do all of that. Well, look, that's because this is the idea with social media, is it's clicking. You need to get clicks. And if social media, this is calling myself good, so I don't mean to do that, but I feel like social media is going to be here. You ain't going to flip a switch and get it to go away. If there's not some good to counterbalance the bad's going to be there, because they're there for the wrong reasons. They're there for the clicks. They're there for the impressions. They're there to get paid. Typically, that's not going to do well for our population. It's going to give hunting overall a bad name most of the time. And I think if there's not good there within that community to kind of say, no, that's not how we do it, that's not how we want to be represented, then I think the badge is going to run amok. I don't think so. You know, if it could end all tomorrow, I think the hunting community would be better off, because we would recruit within. We would be able to do enough without social media to keep the hunting community alive. And frankly, I think the bad part of this social media thing does to the non-hunting community, and kind of makes us seem barbaric and stuff, would be a greater positive. But unfortunately, we're not flipping any switches. I mean, I don't think Elon's going to figure this thing out quick enough to end social media. I don't think, you know, I mean, it's like, so it's not going anywhere. So you got to have the good. But trends that I saw this year, I mean, it's just the same old song and dance, man. Same people just putting stuff out there that they know is going to trigger. They know it is. And that's why they put it out there, you know. I mean, you put on a turkey hat this time, that, you know what it's going to do. You know what you're putting that video out for. And you're going to sit there and sit on your high horse and talk about how it's, you know, whatever. But you know why you're putting that video out there. You know, it ain't to show a turkey hunting video, I can promise you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've talked about it for years now. You absolutely have to take into account what non-hunters perceive, you know, hunting to be via social media. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to brag on myself, but I am going to kind of brag on myself. But I think I will. I don't think I've posted anything in memory on social media that could be used against hunting. I think I'm proud of myself for that. And the stuff that I post on social media, you know, I kind of have in the back of my mind, I know we all do. We know so many people that have zero clue about hunting, and we may be the only hunter in their, you know, quote unquote news feed or on their friends list or whatever. And if we're the only thing that they see in relation to hunting, and if we post something dumb, then that's going to change their whole perspective on what they view as hunting. And I have, my wife has a really good friend of hers. She lives up in Wisconsin. She's a vegetarian of all things, but she knows that, you know, she knows I'm a hunter, you know, and specifically a turkey hunter. And she's on our team. You know, she is one of those that even though she's a vegetarian, she may not ever go out and shoot something and eat it. She will go to the polls and vote for somebody or vote for a bill that is going to be in favor of hunting. And I'm proud of myself for that, you know, because just that's the kind of people I think we need to recruit into our camp. You know, those non-hunting voting public that we've talked about for years now, we have to keep recruiting those people to our side and showing them, hey, this is what you see on these other accounts, you know, that do all these dumb things. That's not what hunting is. You know, here's what we do. We do things in different ways. You know, we have our quote unquote little communities of how, you know, we turkey hunt, how other people turkey hunt, and then there's deer hunters and all the different things that they do. But we do it in a respectful manner and we try not to cause trouble. And so that's, you know, that's the least you could do is just not be dumb on social media.
Mm-hmm.
I want to follow that up, kind of going in a different direction. You kind of hinted at it, you know, as far as tactics and travel, is there anything you did different this year that got you on more turkeys? I mean, you ain't got to divulge all your secrets, but
Man, I think if people watch my videos, they know there's not any secrets left. I mean, I got a camera running like 24 hours a day, it seems like. But no, man, I mean, I'm just an old, you know, I'm just an old soul that's kind of set in my ways. And I mean, flexibility is the only thing that I have needed to improve on. And I think I've just about gotten to myself to where I can kind of come and go and still trying to improve on that, because people think I just quote unquote hunt for a living. They don't know about all of the obligations that I'm signed up for and what I've got to produce and who I've got to answer to and who needs what by what deadline. So there's a lot of that type stuff. But I've even kind of learning as I go with this Benhody project thing and the web content thing and the Mossy Oak Go obligations and sponsor obligations and that kind of thing. I'm learning as I go, and I think I'm getting better at it, which allows me to not hunt more, but just hunt a little bit with less stress. Because, you know, everybody would think that, oh man, he gets to turkey hunt every day, he must just like live on a cloud. And for the most part I do, I guess. But at the same time, there's obligations and the stress of like not knowing what comes next. And now that I've done it for a couple years, I'm like, you know, I've kind of learning how to spread myself, because those first couple of years, like trying to editing and the moving footage, and it takes hours. And then, you know, people don't realize these episodes will take 12, 16, 20, 24 hours to edit, and they want one a day. And you're like, man, that ain't possible. You know, so getting the expectations to kind of reined in to be somewhat realistic, figuring out how to space my content that I gather over the off season out to where it kind of quenches everybody's thirst. And then just kind of time management on my own, you know, in my own life, to where I can do more with less time and, kind of enjoy turkey season a little bit more. If you kind of follow along with the social media channels, you kind of missed out on a lot of the quote unquote kill shots this year, as far as, you know, the after the kill. Usually I would take a good picture like I always do, but I would share like the day after, or that evening you would get what happened that day. You saw a lot less of that because photography, when it comes to turkeys, man, and after you document everything that I do from beginning to end, then the photography part, it begins to look a lot like it just makes work out of it. You know what I mean? And not that it, quote, isn't work, so to speak, from what I do, but it just got to be a drag. Like, so some days, you know, I would take a good picture with the turkey, but I just didn't stress about it like I once did. Waiting till the lighting was just perfect to get the right shot, and driving for an hour to get the right scenery. Like, I just, that's kind of a thing of the past for me. I know there's some guys out there still doing it, and they get remarkable stuff, but you know, if you get a good scenic pic with me, that's because we were close to it. I try to always get something that encompasses the world that they lived in, but you know, I'm not driving 6 hours out of the way to do it anymore.
Dave, I think there's an epidemic of some turkey hunters out there just get stressed out, man. They're anxious. They're, you know, if they get killed on a run and they're not killing turkeys, like, it starts wearing at them. You got any advice for guys like that? I mean, I don't know personally any, but
yeah.
You don't know anybody like that? I do.
Yeah. You got any advice for guys like that, Dave?
No, man, not really. It's going to happen to all of us. I can pretend like if I went on a hunting trip and it was day five and I hadn't sat down on a turkey, that I'd still be in a good mood, but I hadn't. Like, you can watch my videos. Like, I do a terrible job of hiding that kind of thing. You know, I wear my feelings on my sleeve a lot, even if I'm by myself staring into a camera. And I know when I'm hitting the record button, like, hey, the record button's on. Look like you're chipper and happy. Like, I'm just terrible at that. Like, so, you know, I have gotten a lot better about, like, just knowing that the world's not going to end and it's definitely going to come together eventually if I just keep plugging away, and seeing every glass is half full, and appreciating the opportunities that I do have, you know, and realizing you got to have those to make the good days seem like good days. But that's about as much as I can give you. I mean, you know, anxiety's still going to be there. We talked about that just a second ago. I pull out of this flipping house every February. Like, man, I hope I remember how to do this, because it seems like it's been so long ago that I got to sit down and yelp at one. I am not 100% sure, like, I still know how to ride that bike, you know. So it's the anxiety and the unknowingness is always going to be there. I think makes it fun.
There's a monkey on every turkey hunter's back at the beginning of the season. I've talked about it before. Like, until you kill that first one and you got him in your hands, you have no idea if you'll ever kill another turkey in your life.
There's always, I mean, the monkey never leaves. He's always there. He might get a little bit skinnier. He might get a little smaller, but like, as soon as I can't hunt turkeys for another nearly a year, for 10 months now or whatever, and he's already kind of made his way back up there on my shoulder. So
yeah, I never kill another.
No, man, it's tough. These birds, like, we can compare and contrast on the deer a lot because they're both so, you know, and what we do, if, at least for me personally, I think for all of us here, well, me and you, Adam, I think you and I, actually, I may be the only legitimate deer hunter on this call, the only person who actually cares about deer. Dave, I know you're good at deer hunting, but I don't know if it even comes close to turkeys for you. But you know, like, we get so caught up in this, like, we've got to be successful. This goes back to the whole social media conversation as well. We've got to be successful. We've got to be successful. We've got to be successful. And it's really, really hard to overcome that when it's constantly in your face, man. I've had times where I'm like, okay, no social media. I'm done. Finished. Freaking done. Then your phone dings or you got to look at it for work. And it's just really hard. It's hard to overcome that aspect. of it. But, man, I just really appreciate guys like you, Dave, who are so real and honest about your kind of your feeling in the moment, in the season. Like, I never feel like I watch you and feel like you're faking it. Like, if you're mad about something, you can tell that you're upset about it. If you're super jacked up about something, you can tell that you're super jacked up about it. And I've always really appreciated that you, and I've also kind of used you as a standard for a lot of my own opinions, right? Sometimes I'll see some things and maybe I'll hear you speak up about it, or maybe I'll hear you say something against it or for it. And a lot of the time, your influence really goes into shaping my opinion. And so I wanted to say personally to you that I appreciate that. And I'm also curious to know from you, I'm trying to think of the right way to put this. Speaking of just those anxious moments, right? Those moments when you feel like you suck. I'm sure of it. There is a time this season that you felt like, man, I must be the worst turkey hunter on the planet. Can you share story from this season where you just felt like I suck? Because I hold you to such a high standard. I'm like, every time I screw up on a turkey.
Let me tell you something. It happens every year, but for some reason this year, it was a year of missed opportunity, so to speak. Because, like, typically, I took an oath probably a decade ago, because I would always have these reservations about moving on a turkey or something, to where at the end of the day, I would go, what I should have done was. And I'm like, you know what? From now on, when these decisions are presented to me, I'm going to sit down and stop and think and go, in an hour, what am I going to say what I should have done was? Uh-oh, my phone's on low battery. You guys still there?
We're there.
Yeah.
All right. But anyways, I'm going to say, what am I going to say what I should have done was? And so when I took that oath, honestly, I had a lot less missed opportunities. Like, because I would slow down just long enough to go, man, I'm going to wish I would have done this or done that. And more often than not, that comes together. But this year, it wasn't because I failed to do that. It's because, like, I prepared well enough, and two things happened. Something that I still don't have an explanation for happened, or I almost, like, took it for granted that it was going to come together because it was just supposed to, the way it came together. I was like, oh, that's this thing is done. And then it just didn't. So I guess I'm like a little spoiler alert here. I missed two turkeys this year, and I haven't missed two turkeys in a season in my life, I don't think. So both of them were almost identical scenarios too. And not only that, there was like probably three or four other opportunities to where the turkey came up and either I mistraced his footfalls, or I wasn't where he needed to be, or I caught him on camera coming over the ridge top and I didn't see him until he had already seen me and he was making an escape or something. I'm like, that doesn't happen to me. Like, I'm always trained, I'm always acute to the situation. And like three or four different times this year, the turkey got away because I'm thinking to myself, you know what? I've got the best of camouflage. I've got the best material of camouflage. Like, I've got the best leafy suit in the country. Like, I have everything at my disposal. And these freaking turkeys keep seeing me. What am I doing? And I don't know if it was the glass on the camera. I don't know if I need to take more time on the external mic that sticks. I don't know. But I kept having turkeys come. You know, if you hunt the ridges, the turkeys come over. You don't have a whole lot of time to, you know, sing and dance there. You need to make things come together. And I was failing to do that, frankly. And like I said, I just flat out swung and missed on a couple of them. And so, yeah, there was quite a couple handfuls of times this spring where I was like, you know, do I really have a clue what I am doing? Like, how could I have messed up such a perfect situation? I found a perfect turkey and I just crapped the bed, for lack of a better term. You know, I mean, I just made a mess of the situation. So, yeah, they're going to come. I assume every turkey season is going to leave with some of those memories.
Yeah, you know, it is deep inside of me. It's good to know that Dave Owen screws up sometime.
Oh man, this season was a good one for that. There was more opportunities. It's like every time I turned around, I had an opportunity. But like, if I would have made them all come together, it would have been one for the ages, no doubt. But man, I just kept getting caught with my pants down somehow. I don't know.
Couple more questions, and hopefully your phone don't die before we wrap
this thing up. Yeah, I was going to say, I may have to plug this thing in. I don't know if I can get it to tell me what I got going on here.
We'll give you a minute if you need it.
Well, let me see if I can downsize. I got 20%. Y'all reckon that's going to hold?
Yeah, it'll be good.
Yeah, we'll be good.
Yeah.
Everybody likes to talk about gear. We spent a whole night last week, Adam and I, talking about gear. Do you have any new toys this year that you played with?
Let me think.
It's fun to talk about.
Man, like I said, it comes back to the strategy thing and how I approach each spring. I've kind of set my ways and trying to think if there was anything new that really hit the scene. People saw me wearing a bino harness this year, and the only reason I wear that bino harness is that so that I can drop my vest and still have that GoPro on my shoulder. Because I do quite a bit of crawling, and for the couple of years there, I was having to crawl with that vest on just to have that angle. So that bino harness gave me another shoulder strap to clip that thing to. I do like the bino harness, but I've still got to do a little bit of looking around. There may be a better option. I'm not sure. I just haven't got a lot of experience with them. But people, you know, are asking me if I liked it, and verdict's still out, I guess you could say. I do like being able to drop my vest. Let me think. Other than that, man, the calls were the same. You know, it's just kind of guns were the same. The loads were the same. Nothing really groundbreaking that entered the scene that I would say was a game changer. No.
Mm-hmm. What about any changes or plans? What's on the horizon for Pinhoti Project in 2024?
Man, I hope the sand don't run out of this thing. All I hope for from year to year, you know what I mean? At the end, I'm thinking, gosh, if I could just do that one more time, if I could just have a spring with that much flexibility one more time. So that's all my fingers are crossed, hoping that I get to do it again. That's the only I'm going to try. You know, I every year I get to this point in the season and you want to mope, and I do my share of moping around. Don't get me wrong. But I try to be productive. I'm like, man, I'm going to wish I had these 2 or 3 weeks back when it's about February of next year. So I'm trying to be productive. I've got myself a to-do list over here. Courtney told me I'd do a lot more productive if I made a list of the things that I needed to do. So, and it has helped. It really has. So I've got some things done instead of just sitting around and crying, you know. you know, just trying to come up with something, you know, trying to come up with, you know, I mean, silly stuff like shirt ideas or hat ideas that I won't be stressed to come up with something new. Just, you know, trying to be relevant, man. Just the life of a guy in my shoes, I guess.
All right, I got one more question, then I'll be done, and I'll pass it along to anybody else. But the last thing I had for you, what can we as turkey hunters do for turkeys in this off season?
Man, I think we're kind of, as turkey hunters, we're kind of starting to formulate a calendar to where we're figuring out what we need to do at certain times of the year. And I think that's being very productive. A lot of my, like last week, a ton of my week was spent getting caught up on the turkeys for tomorrow stuff. You know, I'm a board member for those guys. And I kind of, my responsibilities kind of, I won't say are forgotten. It's just that I can't be as involved as I should be during the season, considering the demands of what I do. So I get caught up on all that stuff and kind of pick up some pieces that I let fall to the wayside. So a lot of last week was dealing with that and getting all that on the up and up, huge things coming from those guys. I mean, they have not taken, while I've been distracted, they haven't taken their foot off the gas pedal. You know, my cousins puts together the NWTF banquet back in my old hometown, and I was talking to him and getting the date set for all that next month, and gonna help him kind of get the word spread out around that and try to be present for that. So I think, like I said, I think I've had this discussion before at this point in the game. Just being present for the discussions, making sure your voice is heard. Like I said earlier, I think the melting pot analogy is great, because if we all throw our ideas in there, either one or a couple of them is bound to be right. So as long as everybody kind of keeps seeing the data and the strategy, or data and the new findings that we're having from the researchers being, you know, just staying up to date on everything that's being, and also approaching all of that with an open mind. Like, don't come into the doggone discussion with the same flipping, you know, just listen a little bit more than you speak. You know, I mean, I understand people being firm in their beliefs, but and I'm guilty of it as anybody, I think if everybody just can try to be productive in listening to what we're finding, and everybody gives their input, we're sure to find the answers in there somewhere. But like I said earlier, I think we've already done a considerable amount just by being present for the conversations. And I think by paying attention, participating in your agency's comment sections, taking part in those poll, surveys, like you mentioned earlier, because I think that is one of the huge things that has been a win for this surge in interest in turkey hunting, is because the biggest thing for turkey researchers is being able to count the doggone things. We still don't have a proper metric to do that, I don't think. I mean, there is no camera survey that you can really rely on, as far as I can understand, where you can get an accurate population of turkey idea. So I think having a concerned public eye, these biologists and these researchers can't be everywhere at once. So having everybody's eyes available and trained to kind of know what you're looking for has helped tremendously. And I think that that's given the researchers so they can trust that consumer science a little bit more, you know, because people are paying attention. They're just not taking turkey numbers for granted. They're actually paying attention to when they see turkeys in a field, or if they flush poults, somebody else is hearing about it, you know. So I think that's good. And I think as far as what we can do as the public going forward is just stay involved, stay in those conversations, keep those conversations going, and, trying to be productive participants in that conversation.
Dave, my last question, take a little different route. For turkey hunters preparing this off season for the next season, is there any just word of advice you can give to those guys and gals to increase their odds of success in the off season? What would you do, or what would you focus on, or a couple things you might focus on in the off season?
Starting from scratch, I would, I'm going to fall back on what Joey and I were just talking about. I want to make more turkeys. I think anybody that's taken from the population should this time of year be looking to make sure they're adding that many back, you know. So there's got to be turkeys to hunt turkeys. So it's always good to, you know, when it's June, July, August, September, October, November, December, I mean, let's do our part to make sure we're putting them back on the landscape. But then also, just, you know, we talked about this earlier too, time is that one ingredient. You know, I mean, the more time you devote to this thing, the more success, the more opportunities, the more experience you're going to get. So figuring out what you need to do March, April, and May to get yourself another week's vacation or another hall pass or whatever you need to be out there, figure out how to get your flexibility to improve to the point to where you can go when you want to go. That'd be my biggest advice to anybody wanting to prepare for the off season, how do they can enjoy it next spring more.
Well, Dave, my only last question, and it's a really good one. It's a really good question. if you had to choose, which cheap cigar would you choose every single time?
It's always been a cheap Swisher, just the originals.
Cheap Swisher.
The original cheap Swisher sweets you can get at the from the convenience store. You know, you can't mess with tradition, and that's what it's always been.
Now, the whole cigar thing, I'm just actually curious at this point. Are you like a cigar smoker outside of turkey hunting?
I think it's disgusting. It's disgusting. Smoking is disgusting. I mean, it is nasty. It just makes you stink. Your breath is terrible. It'll ruin your teeth. I mean, there's nothing good about it, really.
You're kind of a smoker, so
I picked it up from Chubbs. I mean, I give credit where credit's due. It was something that he kind of added to my arsenal when we started hunting together some years ago, 10 years ago, I guess now. But you know, I mean, he was. I will, you know, I'm not one of those guys that runs around and pretends I did all this cool stuff, because, you know, when we started hunting together, he did the cigar, and when he sat down with his turkey and we discussed what happened and laughed and cried and whatever happened with the turkey, the cigar was a part of that. And I thought, man, that's cool. That's something that I can do. And so I just picked it up from him, and it's turned into what it is, you know. But no, you won't see me smoking cigars at the lake or on the beach or, you know, out having a beer with my buddies. I'm not a smoker. No.
See, I've got my own theory of why Dave Owens kills so many turkeys in a season. And it's because you smoke those cheap little, cigars, because you can smoke one of them in probably about 20 minutes. And Parker, Jacob, and I mean, we've smoked cigars for years, in our opinion, you know, life's just too short for cheap cigars. So we bring, you know, hog leg cigars sometimes to the woods with us. And it takes us over an hour to smoke one of those cigars. So Dave's just smoking one in 10 minutes, he can be on his way and go kill more turkeys.
Well, our rule is one turkey a day. So we don't ever kill more than one a day. But we've been known to smoke the cigar and nap, and it'll be 3 or 4 hours later before we're standing up. But that being said, one quick story is I started the cigar thing, I think a year after, I think this is on video. We had some cigar folks sent me some cigars. It was Southern Tab.
Cigar. I've heard of that.
Okay. They sent me a handful of cigars, and Sleazy and I killed some turkeys in North Carolina. And luckily it was on a little private piece I had, and we were real close to the truck. Because I was like, man, we're going to smoke these fine cigars this time. And we went to smoking on them things. And let me tell you something. I'm not a tobacco guy. Like, I can't dip. I've tried dipping twice, and I've puked my guts up both times. Like, I can't do tobacco. Like, if I chew on a real cigar, like, I get sick feeling. Like, I don't know if it's the nicotine or what it is. So we were chewing on these things and smoking them. He and I both were like, I don't think I can stand up. Like, we about got like a high off this cigar. And I was like, man, if it was up to me to walk a mile out of this place right now, I mean, I just have to sit down and take a break. So the reason that I don't smoke real cigars is flat out because I can't. Like, it would put me on my butt, and I'd probably have to spend the night, you know?
Golly, dude, that's funny.
Couldn't keep up with Joey, I guess is what I'm saying.
I don't know. I mean, I literally don't. I mean, you obviously smoke a lot of cigars, and like, I don't know that I could keep continually doing that if I didn't enjoy it, if I didn't like tobacco. Like, I think kind of ironic, and I'm actually probably going to use this recording at some point of Dave Owen saying, I'm just not a tobacco guy.
No, because it's freaking hilarious. Not. And like, I do enjoy that the smell of lighting a cigar is nostalgia for me. Like, that smell is it. And I do enjoy like the cheap cigar taste, like that initial taste of like just, I don't know, it's just that smell that feels, you know, it's just that aroma is just all around you. Like, I do enjoy that.
They're flavored too, ain't they? Aren't those Swishers flavored? Yeah.
Well, no, the ones I do are typically originals, but like, you know, Hunter likes the Tropical Fusions, and Drew and them smoke the grapes, and Tanner smokes the grapes. They do all that. I just get the originals. But that being said, I do enjoy that. But like, if it came down to smoking a real cigar where you chew on the thing as much as you smoke on it, like, no, I can't do that. I'd be flopping like a fish out of water.
Oh man. Mm-mm-mm. Well, I don't got any more. No more questions for me.
Yep. No more for Mr. Owens tonight. Well,
I appreciate it, guys.
Oh man, we appreciate it. If you're those guys and gals that are out there and are still listening to turkey stuff in the middle of June, y'all are people. Let me tell you, y'all are people. But Dave, we really appreciate your time tonight, and everything that all the observations and everything that you've shared with us. We'll let you go. It's late enough for me anyway. It's getting close to my bedtime.
It's dinner time.
Dinner time, supper time. But we'll, like I said at the beginning of the episode, this is probably our last maybe weekly episode here. And we'll get on. We'll keep doing stuff in the off season because Parker can't shut me up for 9 months. That's for sure. So we'll keep a little bit of turkey stuff rolling off and on throughout the off season here. But we appreciate y'all hanging with us this season. I've had a lot of fun. I could do this probably every night if my wife allowed it. but I've had a lot of fun chatting every week, you know, for the last few months now. I think February is when we kicked this thing off. And we've been steady talking about turkeys every week. And it has not gotten old. I'm really sad to not do this every week. But y'all hang with us, you know, don't unsubscribe. We're going to have some more stuff coming out. Like I said, it may be bi-weekly, maybe once a month, and maybe whenever, if Parker lets me just get on here, one random day in October and ramble about turkeys for an hour, then that'll be it.
I'm just going to, all of a sudden it's going to show up on my Spotify that there's a new Limb Hanger episode and it's just Joey. Just Joey.
I got into them real good cigars and just went on a rant.
There you go.
Hell yeah.
We appreciate everything, boys. Y'all stick with us, like I said, during the off season. But in the meantime, keep doing whatever it takes to make more turkeys out there. And we'll catch you later on the Limb Hanger Turkey Hunting Podcast.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Limb Hanger Turkey Hunting Podcast. Hope you tune in next week for another great conversation about our favorite bird in the woods, as the wild turkey. We'll talk to you guys next week.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Craving the coffee flavor you love, but without the caffeine? Kachava's got you covered with their newest coffee flavor. This all-in-one nutrition shake delivers bold, authentic flavor crafted from premium decaffeinated Brazilian beans. Quality nutrition shouldn't be complicated. Just 2 scoops of Kachava's all-in-one nutrition shake and you've got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. Whether you're craving that coffee taste to kickstart your morning ritual or as a nutrient-packed reward to round out your afternoon, Kachava keeps you fueled and satisfied wherever your day takes you. Plus, it actually tastes delicious. No fillers, no nonsense. Just the good stuff your body craves. And for the times you feel like switching it up, you've got 7 flavors to choose from, all with the highest quality ingredients. Treat yourself to the flavor and nutrition your body craves. Go to kachava.com and use code FITNESS. New customers get 15% off their first order. That's KACHAVA.com, code FITNESS.